Welcome to the Gentleman Ultra podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Simon Cusidano, a Roma fan, master of all things audio, and the super producer of Serie A Chronicles podcast. Simon, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, thanks. Lovely to be talking to you for this podcasting masterclass. That's how we should set it up, you know, yes. Obviously,
charge a fee next time, mate.
Oh no, for sure. Yeah, there's no fee involved, but yeah. How do you get all those audio snippets into your pod and make it sound so awesome? Because you do a bang up job. It's fantastic.
Ah, thanks for that. Yeah, I suppose YouTube is my best friend. I like to rip some commentary off YouTube if it's relevant, you know, and then just kind of fade it in and fade it out in between Nikki and Mina talking, or, you know, if we've got a guest like we did last week, we had Patrick Kendrick. And it just seems to work. And we do actually get a lot of feedback saying, you know, I love how you do that. You know, it's
awesome.
Serie A Chronicles isn't the only podcast that does that. I have noticed that, you know, podcasts like the Totally Football Show, for example, They do similar things as well occasionally. Yeah, I think it sounds great and it works in the right context, yeah.
Yeah. How hard was that to master and get it right? Well, were you doing dummy runs before your first episode?
No,
or you already knew how to do it?
You know, I've always worked with computers, so, you know, to work out a new thing, it's not too difficult. So I use Adobe Audition to do the audio editing. And it just gives you all the tools that you need. You know, you separate your tracks, audio tracks, and you can use the fading tool and that kind of thing. So it's not that difficult if you know what the tools are within the application. So
the link to Simon's masterclass course will be located in the show notes.
quite ready for that.
So. Yeah. So Serie A Chronicles podcast, of course, which you produced with Mina Rizzucchi and Nikki Bandini. How did all that come about? How does a guy in Perth end up producing an Italian football podcast with two people in Europe?
That is a very good question, Frank. So you probably would have heard when Nikki and Mina and Gab Marcotti and who else? Matteo Bonetti. They've had Kay Murray. They've had a bunch of people that were on the Serie Awesome podcast, which was run and produced by ESPN. Up until about two years ago or so. So ESPN, you know, finished their rights or no longer had the rights for Serie A. So that podcast was kind of shelved. And Nikki Bandini was probably August 2021, put out a message saying, look, sorry, but on Twitter, she tweeted, sorry, no one's, you know, we're not doing the Serie Awesome podcast anymore. But if anyone's got any ideas, would love to hear, you know, how we could maybe start up again.
I remember seeing that tweet.
you saw it? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I do. Yeah.
And probably about 20 or so people had replied saying, oh, I really hope you know, get something off the ground. But no one had actually offered to help out in any way. So I messaged her and I said, look, can we, you know, have a private conversation, you know, offline? And because I've done a little bit of podcasting previously and I'd love to give it a go. So we started communicating about how it could be done. And then Nikki brought Mina into the conversation a day or two later. We did, a Zoom call like this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, in the meantime, I had worked out some ideas of how we could produce it. And luckily for me, they were like, yep, let's do it. And yeah, it just came together kind of organically like that. And so created a production company, like registered a business, Media Chronicles, created a new brand name for the podcast, Serie A Chronicles, and created some branding, like the logo. I sketched it out what I wanted. I had that vision in mind with like the sort of like a Scudetto badge with the Italian colors and the Serie A trophy with a microphone coming out of it. I had all these ideas like that just kind of exploded into my mind. And luckily, a good friend of mine from school is a graphic designer. I gave him the sketch and I said, Jerry, make it for me. And yeah, in about a day or two, that logo was made. So I had the branding. And I love the branding of the podcast.
Shout out to Jerry, and if anyone wants a logo.
And yeah, just get in touch with me and I'll put you in touch. He's a local graphic designer here in Perth and he's absolutely brilliant. And yeah, and we were away. A few weeks later, we were making the first podcast.
Yeah. How was that moment when you pressed record? Were you like, what is going on?
Yeah, it
What have I done?
I think I tweeted just during the last week or so, something like, you know, it still amazes me that each week I get to work with my two favorite journalists, my two favorite football journalists. And now we've even just had the voice of Serie A on as a guest, Patrick Kendrick, because in Australia, pretty much if you watch a Serie A match, it's more than likely you're going to be listening to him commentate. So that combination of Nicky Mina and Patrick Kendrick on last week, it was like, I kind of had the hair standing up on my arms, you know, while they were recording the podcast, and I was there in the background as the producer. That was a really cool moment for me. And, you know, we've had other people like Mark Bosnich. We had Gianluca Buzio, a player for Venezia. Gab Marcotti's been on. Yeah, and who else we've had? We've had Sasha Pizzani. He's a really good follow on Twitter for football, all football things, and also Adriano De Monte.
Yeah,
we've had him on a few times actually. He's really great because I love what he's done with his career. You know, coming from, you know, like us really, you know, guys, Italian Aussie guys from Australia, and in some way wanted to be involved in Italian football, and he's actually gone and immersed himself in it, you know, and yeah, I just love what he's done. I think it's fantastic. But yeah, what I felt like when I first pressed record on, you know, the first podcast with Nicky and Mina, I was like, what am I doing here? I'm a bit of a, you know, I've done my own little podcasting with some friends, and that's nothing compared to working with, you know, the real professionals. But yeah, look, we get along like a house on fire now, the three of us. We have half hour conversations just laughing and joking around before we actually record an episode. You know, sometimes we forget, oh, we've got a podcast to make here, guys. We better just stop, you know, shooting the breeze. But yeah, they're fantastic. They're fantastic to work with. Just great people, both of them.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I always have to shake my head even when I press record on these ones, because I'm like, hey, what am I doing here? I have no place being here. But
you've had some wonderful guests recently. I mean, I wouldn't even bother to include myself in the category of some of the people that you've had on, you know, some famous names. So yeah, well done, mate. You've done amazingly with the Gentleman Ultra podcast. I'm a quite, you know, regular listener to it, so it's fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. It's very kind. But yeah, for those that don't know, you mentioned there, so you grew up in Perth, is that right?
Yeah, born and raised in Perth.
There's a pretty big Italian community parents in Perth as well. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a large Italian community in Perth. Also, for people who don't know, you know, back in the day of Italian migration to Perth, you know, post-war migration from Italy to Australia, Fremantle, which is, you know, a coastal suburb of Perth, was the first port that everyone would arrive at. So you'd land in Fremantle and then maybe go on to Sydney, Melbourne, and that kind of thing. So yep, obviously a lot of those people would, you know, got off at Fremantle at the first stop. And yeah, my father arrived here in 1969. So, you know, not quite post-war, but you know, he came, he was going to be for a holiday. He ended up staying. So, and I'm very grateful that he did that, because as much as I love Italy, it's great. It's obviously a much better lifestyle.
Yeah,
in my opinion, living in Australia, so much more opportunity and that kind of thing, especially coming from, you know, a Sicilian background. My parents are Sicilian, so yes, that's kind of the brief story of my family background. Yeah,
yeah, I know. My mum's mentioned it to me in the past before, where the boats have made multiple stops prior to reaching Australia, and her younger sisters have always said, like, "Is this it? Do we get off now?
Yeah,
we're here." And they're like, "No, not yet. Yeah, you know." And I know Fremantle was one of those. Are we here yet? Can we get off? No, not now. Yeah. Still got to get to Melbourne. Still got to get to Sydney. A long way to go. Yeah. So there is like a huge, like, I know there's a big Italian community and diaspora in Perth. Yeah. What was it like watching football as a young kid in Perth? Do you remember going to many local club games or?
Yeah.
You know, I guess there wasn't a national soccer league games as opposed to until Perth came in. But what was that like? Was it just every 4 years being woken up to watch Italy play?
Absolutely that, yes. Every 4 years it was, you know, we would hang out for the World Cup. My first memory of the World Cup is Italia 90, which we spoke about briefly, I think, on our last episode that we did together. So I won't go into too much detail about that. But yeah, I remember vividly getting up for Italia 90. I was probably 8 years old. Yeah, about 8 years old. But not just watching, but also playing. Like my local club was called Balcatta Etna. So obviously Etna being named after the volcano in Sicily. It was founded by a bunch of Sicilians in the 70s. And that was the closest club to me growing up in the suburb of Stirling, and the next suburb was Balcatta. So played for Balcatta Etna from the age of 8 years old. I've still got friends from, those first years. You know, one of my best friends is, played with me in that team, and then we went to school together and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I grew up with a lot of Italians, both at school and at my local football club. So,
is there an Italian team? I don't know who it is. I can't remember. They've actually got the three colours, isn't it? Like the three Italian, like the colours and the flag. I'm just trying to think who it is.
That would probably be Perth Soccer Club.
It is Perth Soccer Club, which yeah.
Back in the day were called Perth Italia.
That's it, yeah.
So that's probably the most famous club in Western Australia. I also played for them as well. So, yeah, I've got an attachment to them too. So my original club, Balcatta Etna, was part of three Italian clubs around Perth metropolitan area that formed Perth Italia, which then went on to become, a more elite a club.
Yep.
Perth Italia is one of the clubs that does quite well in the state, Western Australian State League.
Did you ever go and watch like Perth Glory in the early days, the NSL?
Yes, yep. Was I haven't gone to watch them for quite a number of years, but back in the early days, yeah, I was a loyal supporter,
You weren't at that grand final, were you, with Wollongong?
I was.
Oh, you were? Oh.
Yeah. Yes.
How great was that game? That was amazing.
Anyone who doesn't know, it was a local or national grand final in a year. I can't quite remember.
Is it 90s? No, where are we? So they went back to back. It was early 2000s because they played South Melbourne the following year at Parramatta and they won that grand final too. Oh, the years got me. Was it 2001, 2002, somewhere around there? Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. So basically Perth Glory was winning 3-0 at halftime. By full time, it had gone to 3-3 and then went to penalties. And unfortunately, playing at home in Perth, they lost on penalties, unfortunately, yeah.
But, and the Mighty Wolves won. Yes.
Yes, against your team. Well,
my earliest memory is my dad used to take us to watch the Wolves play against in the NSL. So it was, we'd go and watch Marconi at times, but primarily every second weekend, we were watching the Wolves play at home. And obviously,
I was originally a Marconi fan until Perth Glory came on the scene because Perth didn't have a club. But when Perth, when Perth Glory were founded, I obviously became a Perth Glory fan. Probably in the last 10 or so years, I haven't been very, I don't want to rubbish the Australian A-League, but I just haven't been very on board or a big fan of it. I watch it occasionally if it's on TV and I've got some time, but I'm much more interested in Serie A these days.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of Serie A, so how did you end up following Roma? We all know that you're a Roma fan. Where'd that all come about from?
Yeah, my father is a Juventus fan and I'm the middle son of three sons. They are both Juventus fans as well. They followed in my dad's footsteps. But I don't know, I've probably always been slightly the black sheep of the family, but not in a negative way, but just, more do my own thing. And I like to go against the grain a little bit, at least in my childhood years, let's say. When it came to time around the time of becoming interested in football, I had a uncle living in Rome working as a sales rep for Barilla, which was the historic, but at the time was the main sponsor, the shirt sponsor of Roma and, the pasta producer. And he sent over a shirt. That was my first, recognition of, different clubs and that kind of thing, and that there was anything apart from Juventus. So yeah, I decided, well, that's my team. And then when Italia 90 came along, there was Giannini. You know, I obviously knew of Giannini, but you know, then I got a really good chance to watch him closely. Fell in love with him, so that really cemented my love of Roma. So yeah, became a Roma fan because of that shirt. It was the Patrick made shirts with number 5 on the back for Falcao.
Yeah.
Oh, so, wow. I didn't have a clue who Falcao was when I was like 6 years old. Yeah, for me, Roma was Giuseppe Giannini.
Yeah. And it's funny because of a certain generation of, like, you know, I'm like early 40s, but of a certain generation, there's only Totti, and that everyone only knows just Totti. But for, like, yeah, I said, a certain generation, there is Giannini and Giuseppe Giannini, and he is the player. No, he's the king, regardless of who's the king and who's the prince.
Well, he's the prince.
His nickname
was the prince.
He's got like such a cult following of Giannini that everyone loves him. Yeah, and what made him so special?
What made him so special? Well, just his elegance on the ball. You know, I loved how he would just control the play, and a lot of, like, especially at Italia 90, a lot of Italy's play would go through him. You know, he was the midfield playmaker, and great vision, great touch, very classy on the ball. He was just very creative. You know, there's been much more creative players. If you look at, you know, think of players like Andrea Pirlo, you know, he's not quite in that class, but there was just something about him that, you know, in my formative years of learning about the game and playing the game, he was the star for my team. So yeah, he was my idol, and yeah, just it stuck. But if you could go back, you know, the generation before Giannini was Agostino Di Bartolomei, was the number 10 and captain, and you know, Roman, you know, Roma loves their tradition of having their captain being, you know, a local boy. You know, if you think currently of Lorenzo Pellegrini, there's another one. You know, and they're always these midfield, you know, centre midfield players. Yeah, yeah. I it's a tradition of Roma that I really love, I suppose. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, they've since had Totti, but two very, very different players. Yeah, were you, and even prior to that, yeah, like, were you able to watch and follow their Scudetto run in the early 2001? I think it, like, being in Perth, could you see of it then and there?
Oh, I watched it, you know, whenever it was on Rai International. You know, we had the Rai International subscription, so if Roma was playing, I was watching. And I actually vividly remember staying up and watching the last match of that 2000-2001 season when they beat Parma at home 3-1 to clinch the Scudetto, and just the sea of red and yellow, the flags, and you know, with, you know, 5 or so minutes to go, they're 3-1 up, and you know, the crowd rushed onto the pitch, and it was just chaos. And I remember Fabio Capello just screaming at the top of his lungs, "Get off! You're going to ruin it!" You know, you know, because they were possibly at risk of, you know, some sanctions even if they tore down the goals or something like that. You know, Romans are crazy. you just never know. A little bit like Neapolitans, I suppose. Which we're going to see, you know, this season, which is exciting, I think, to you know, we're obviously going to see Napoli win the Scudetto for the first time in 33 years. And I think the scenes that will come out of Naples will be just out of this world, you know, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And I know that Roma and Napoli have a, you know, a big rivalry. Back in the day, they were like a twinned, and the sets of fans have had a fallout for, you know, obviously ridiculous reasons that, you know, ultras being ultras. But yeah, I don't feel that kind of rivalry with Napoli being so far away, you know, living in Australia. So yeah, I think it's going to be fantastic watching them. And yeah, they've got a beautiful team. If you look at players like Victor Osimhen and Kvaratskhelia, yes, it's hard to get that name out. They're just, you know, like Patrick Kendrick said on our podcast last week, they're a joy to watch. And it's just, can't say it in simpler terms than that.
Yeah. And even the neutrals, like, no neutral would begrudge them a victory, you know, other than the diehard fans of some teams. But How can you absolutely how can you not wish him well? You can't not
as well as in the Champions League as well. I mean, you know, I would love to see a Napoli versus Milan final. You know, I don't think Milan would get that far at this point, but you know, I would love to see a Napoli make the final of the Champions League and you know even win it. That would just be amazing. I don't know if they've got the legs in them to do it, but you know, I think Spalletti is at this point probably the best manager in Europe. I think so. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
My optimistic take is all three finals, they'll be all Italian affairs.
So it would be a dream. It would be an absolute dream. Yep.
Oh, wouldn't that be funny? Lazio-Fiorentina.
I would want Fiorentina to beat Lazio in one final.
We'll have Inter-Napoli in the other, and then in the Europa League, obviously Roma and Juve. Yeah, I'm guessing.
Roma to beat Juve would be fantastic. That'd be a bit of a moment between, you know, in my family, I think.
Yeah. Isn't that funny though? Because the demise of Italian football and, you know, we focus on everything that's so wrong with the game and everything that's going on. And yet no one still, or very rarely do you hear that, you know, things are going well. If it is on the field, that we things can't just sit back and enjoy, you know.
Financially, things are not fantastic. Obviously, if you make a comparison with, you know, a number of other leagues, but especially the English Premier League, you know, I was at my parents' place yesterday for, you know, family dinner, and I was sitting on the couch watching Bournemouth versus Manchester City with my brother. And I honestly very rarely watch English football these days. And, you know, my brother made the comment to me, this is my brother, the Juventus fan. He said, look at Bournemouth. Look at the way they play. They've got more money than Juventus. They got more money than any Italian club. And we had a bit of a chuckle about that. And honestly, the quality of football wasn't fantastic, I have to say. Mm. It wasn't great. Like, I would rather watch Sassuolo versus Atalanta or Lecce versus Salernitana rather than watch. But, you know, and I don't say that to put down the entire league, but that's I'm just what my preference is.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch anything of Italian football than pretty much anything of English football. And that's just the way I've always been. I like to watch the highlights here and there. And, you know, there's amazing players in that league and there's some amazing teams and amazing managers. But for me, it's Serie A all the way.
Mm. Yeah. And of course, speaking of amazing teams, we spoke about it on the World Cup Memories podcast. So you were lucky enough to take a ride with the Azzurri in 2006.
Yeah.
So for those that don't know or haven't heard back, I recommend going back and then listening to the episode. Yeah. So just tell us, like, what are some of your greatest memories, you know, from that time in Germany, but in particular, the semi-final and the final, if you can summarize it in less than 2.5 hours, if not more.
How long have we got?
Yeah.
Look, what an amazing experience, you know, to grow up, like we said, you know, waking up in the early hours over here in Australia to watch Italy. And it just feels like, you know, that's a dream. Is it actually happening in reality, or are you seeing some kind of show, you know, that, but it's actually not real, you know? But then you actually go to a World Cup, it's like, gosh, this is actually a thing that really happens, you know? I suppose we're a little bit unfortunate in Australia that we are so far away from it. You know, we don't live in the UK where you can hop on a half-hour flight and you're in some other European city and you can watch a match. You
know, even with, like, the upcoming Women's World Cup and all the Italian group stages, they're all, like, all the group games, sorry, they're all in New Zealand. I'm so excited to be able to go and watch them play, and I'm like, damn it. They've jinxed it. It's not even going to be in Sydney. But yeah, right. Do you think it's like you said, it's right, because it looks like a TV show, or it looks like a movie. It's something that we never see. When I was there in the Euros in 2016, and it's so surreal.
Exactly.
To, like, hear that opening intro to the Italian national anthem and to see the crowd and see the field and see the players and just go, wow, like, this is, you know, years
when
and
you're
years
there,
of
it's like you're on another planet in some way, you know, like you're actually part of it, you know. So I saw the Italy versus Australia game, which was a little bit heart wrenching, you know. I didn't ever want that situation to occur, and it did. And I suppose, you know, we could talk about the ending, but to me, it was fine. It was a legitimate penalty and all that kind of thing. But let's not even bother getting into that, because Australians love that topic. Drives me crazy. saw that match. I saw the semi-final against Germany. And I met Salvatore Schillaci before that match started. He was sitting seven rows behind me, and I went and had a photo with him. And yeah, and he was sitting next to Antonio Cabrini, who was, you know, infamously missed the penalty in the 82 World Cup final, yeah, which didn't matter. But
if that's not a good enough omen going to watch Italy play before a match, yeah, I don't know what is. Because I think before the last time I went to watch Italy against Spain in the quarters for the Euros, I was on the verge of, I was having panic attacks and bloody anxiety, and I was ready to walk out of the stadium because I just couldn't bear to watch them lose.
Yeah, it was that. I mean, you know, everyone knows about that semi-final and how it went. It was, you know, just end to end, a lot of it, and it was just edge of your seat stuff. It was, yeah, it was amazing. So, you know, to think back that, you know, I've attended one of the most iconic World Cup matches of all time, because that is no doubt about it. It's, yeah, I sometimes have to pinch myself. Yeah, and then, you know, to see Italy lift the trophy at the final a few days later, and yeah, it blows my mind. It still blows my mind.
Did anyone sit down for extra time? Was everyone standing the whole time? Can you remember?
Are we talking about the semi-final?
For the semi-final, yeah.
I think we were sitting, yeah. I think sitting. But, you know, obviously, you know, when the first goal went in the 118th minute or whatever it was, I think everyone stood, you know, everyone jumped up and was hugging and falling all over each other and continued that way until the end when you know, you turned around and Del Piero slotted in the next one. And it was just delirium.
Yeah. Because had you realized that there was another counterattack on by that point? Or was everyone still cheering?
We were still celebrating and there was a bit of a roar, and turned around and just saw the last part of it. So I didn't really see, you know, when Cannavaro headers the ball out of the box, yep, and goes and collects it. I'm pretty sure I missed that.
Yeah.
And didn't see Del Piero making that run down kind of like the left wing, which started in Italy's defensive penalty area.
Yep.
So I probably would have seen from, you know, when he's getting close to the penalty box and Gilardino lays it off. That's when I would have turned over and looked over my shoulder.
Oh.
And yeah, so.
Yeah, it's arguably the greatest defensive header and clearing header of all time, and the arguably the greatest layoff of all time. Those two, like, they're just it's such a magic goal. It almost explains like an entire World Cup just in that goal, in terms of like drama, yep, and emotion, mm-hmm, and anticipation and the build up. Like, and Cannavaro for that month was just like nothing could get past him. No one could get past him. It's amazing.
That goal there, I've thought about it often. I struggle to kind of compare it to any other goal that I've seen. I'm sure there's something that you could, you know, that's happened in history of football that you could say, you know, it's a comparable counterattack. But that one, just the way it unfolded, was, you know, involving those four players, you know, Cannavaro, Totti, Gilardino, Del Piero. It just, it's kind of like the world stopped. The earth stopped at that point.
It did.
And
you're right.
Germany were just at sixes and sevens. They just had no answer to what was happening. It was, yeah, very, that is the surreal moment of, I mean, that wasn't the winning goal, really, because, you know, Grosso's goal was the winning goal.
Yep.
Again, that was a moment that I vividly remember.
Oh.
Starting from when Pirlo had the shot that forced Lemon save to force it out for a corner, and then Del Piero trots over. I can close my eyes and picture it. Yeah.
Isn't that, that's one of the great underrated things of football. When, you know, when someone's got like the momentum and the advantage, and you know that a goal's coming and the ball goes out for a corner, and the whoever it is, the supporters all just like rally as one, and the whole volume level, the stadium goes up, and everyone knows, oh, there's a goal coming. Like, and everyone goes crazy for a corner. It's like celebrating, you know, like gala day when you're a kid, you know, if you're winning on corners, it's like one more corner, you know, but get that corner and you just know that something's going to happen.
Like the air of anticipation. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know exactly. I can feel it as we're talking about it. I remember it, you know, what, like I said, watching Del Piero trot over to take the corner. And
were you down that end or the opposite? You were the opposite.
I was behind that goal. Yeah.
Yep. So
that was the, like, up in the corner. That's where the Italian fans were situated, up in that corner. And it was a very intimidating atmosphere because, you know, 66,000 Germans versus a few thousand Italian fans. And, you know, they were drowning the noise from the Italians every time. until it just went dead silent. Dead silent. Well, it wasn't silent around me, but the rest of the stadium went dead silent when Grosso scored that beautiful goal. And
oh, amazing.
Yeah, a little bit similar to the way Di Maria scored in the Europa League for Juventus. I mean, obviously much further out, but that action that he did to curl it to the far post top corner, that reminded me of Grosso's action to score the winner against Germany in 06.
Yeah. Did you consider getting on the... See, I would have considered coming home and getting on a plane after that because nothing's going to get better than that. Like, were you nervous going into the final after knowing that you had tickets?
I had a ticket. I had some German man's name on the ticket, which I sourced through a friend, and I paid I think €600 for it. But in between the semi-final and the final, I was bedridden for about 3 days. Ooh. I had a cold, and I mean, I could have had a broken leg. I was still going to go. Don't worry about it.
So you had,
but
man,
yeah, I,
yeah, you
I had,
had
some
man
recovery
flu.
days.
Yeah, man flu. So that would have been that was deadly then.
I had a bit of man flu.
That's
yeah.
not undersell.
I had
not
recovered
undersell
in time
it,
for the final. Got on the train in the early hours of the morning. I was on the west side of Germany, staying with family, and I think it was a 5 or 6 hour train ride. Went over to Berlin, watched the game, came back later that night after we'd won. So it was kind of like a 24-hour round trip without sleep, and I was just, yeah, I was a wreck, but a happy wreck once I got back to home to my family, that's for sure.
Yeah. What was it like when you left? Because obviously you mentioned you had like a five-hour ride. As you got closer, were more and more fans getting on? Were you
yeah,
seeing more
yeah,
Italian
I remember,
fans? Was it the anticipation building a little bit more?
Yeah, you know, spent the afternoon probably in the fan mile near the Brandenburg Gate. And you know, there was activities and things set up and that kind of thing. So a bit of interaction with other fans, and I bought the scarf, the 50-50 scarf that they have at all tournament matches. So I've got that from the semi-final and the final, a bit of a souvenir. But yeah, it was just a great atmosphere. And yeah, I mean, the atmosphere at a tournament is amazing. And I just recommend for anyone listening, if you ever have a chance to go along to a World Cup or Euros, or I would imagine Copa America as well, of course, but I've never been there. Yeah, just do it. It's a bucket list event, whether you go to one match or a bunch of matches. It's something else. It's just a party atmosphere, great vibes. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
about it all the time.
Yeah.
And and people were, getting on the train, the closer we got to Berlin, and I remember looks from German fans. Because I obviously had my Italian flag and with me, and that kind of thing. I think I was wearing a Roma shirt at the time. Yeah, some funny looks, but tournaments, everyone's there for a good time. When you're amongst rival fans. So I remember posing for photos with French fans after the World Cup final. I remember a group of French fans had come along. They had a replica World Cup trophy. And I posed with them, like showing the trophy in their face. I think it was half an hour after Italy just won the thing, and we were still having a great time and laughing about it. So it was a great atmosphere.
Yeah. Did you see Zidane's headbutt? Did you see it all go
no,
down?
No. It was directly in my line of sight. Looking forward, but the ball was at the other end, and everyone in the stadium pretty much missed it. So I needed my brother watching at home here in Perth to text me to tell me what had happened, because they weren't showing replays of anything controversial on the stadium screen. So no one had a clue. Very interesting. That event, whether the fourth official actually saw it happen and that's why he called the referee over, or whether he saw it out of the corner of his eye on the monitor. I don't know. I don't think that will probably ever come out. But look, at the end of the day, I don't really think that it affected the outcome of, the game or the penalty shootout, because, I mean, the player that missed was Trezeguet. I mean, I think he would have taken a penalty anyway, probably.
It was karma for Euro 2000, see?
Yeah. David Trezeguet is a fantastic player. You wouldn't... it's a shame that it had to be him.
Yeah.
A great servant of the league, let's say. But yeah, he had stitched us 6 years before, and And hadn't he had missed a penalty in the 2003 Champions League final against Milan, I think, for Juventus?
I think so. Yeah, I think you're
so
right.
I think he missed a penalty in that. So, yeah, he owed Lippi, let's say, because Lippi was his manager. It's amazing how like you said, karma, things come around. Yeah.
Things just come around. So speaking of karma, so like Roma, all of a sudden everything's turning up rosy for them. Yeah. What's the life of a Roma fan, going back to what we were talking about earlier? Yeah. How's that ride been since your early days and coming into this Jose Mourinho period?
Well, Roma has always been a fan, has always been a kind of, it's a romantic struggle to be a Roma fan, right? Because they're a club very similar to Napoli in a way that if you win something, you celebrate it for the next 10, 20, 30 years, right? Napoli's been celebrating their, you know, Maradona era for the last 30 years. Roma's quite similar in that way because, you know, they're just, you know, I suppose there's a little bit of a victimization mentality, if not within individuals, but I think if you think about the tifoseria, right, the fan base, they think of themselves as beaten down by the powerful, rich North,
yeah,
you know, Northern Three clubs, obviously. So there's that, and then that is, I suppose, is a dominant mentality of the Roma fan base. But that aside, you know, they won 2001 again, celebrated it for 20 years. So many missed opportunities in that time, you know. Probably should have won another in that time, probably should or could have won another two or three.
Yeah.
Scudetti, you know.
Going back to back.
Yeah, back to back. But, you know,
that would have been fun.
There was what, the year when was it Ranieri was the coach, and they were heading towards, I think they got themselves in front of Inter, didn't they? And then they lost away to Sampdoria.
Yeah.
Pazzini, Giampiero Pazzini. Is that his name? Giampiero Pazzini?
Giampaolo Pazzini.
Scored a couple goals against us with Antonio Cassano playing against us. And, you know, kind of threw away the chance of the Scudetto in that match, in a match that they should have won without too much trouble. You know, and
that was a great strikers duo. I know you got Battistuta, Montella and Totti, but Pazzini and Cassano up front for Sampdoria, they had a great one season. I think it was one season.
Yeah, it was
pairing.
I recommend anyone go on YouTube and watch the Cassano Totti partnership.
Yes.
There's so many highlights of that. I mean, I don't know if there's ever been a better, like, instinctive, intuitive type of partnership, strike partnership, that's ever existed. You know, there's been some great partnerships. You know, you think of Van Basten, Hullet, you know, that kind of thing. But just two players interacting each other, kind of like they are two halves of the one player in some way. They're just.
And so it's like such an unlikely pairing in terms of like personality and character, like from everything you read and you hear and you see.
Yeah, but like just they were so in tune with each other. It just was just unfortunate that, you know, it didn't really end well with Cassano at Roma. He was just a bit of a hot, you know, hothead. But they just produced some beautiful football. But going back to your question, you know, what's it been like being a Roma fan? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not like being a Juventus fan, you know, where you're going to have the expectation is to win, you know, and the performance doesn't matter so much as the results.
So what is the expectation? Sorry to cut you off there, but yeah. If you get a trophy and you finish in top four, is that like a successful year for you, for Roma, sorry?
I mean, if you look at last year, you know, won the Conference League, and this year they would expect to finish top four. So that's a great achievement, I believe. You know, in some other years, maybe this Roma team could be a Scudetto runner. Contender. You know,
yeah, because even like last year winning that trophy, that's what I was telling Roma fans. I was talking to them, I was like, that's awesome. You won a trophy. Who cares what level it is or how much the prize money is? You won a trophy. You had away trips. You get to celebrate. Like, no one can take that off you.
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be that, you know, this, you know, Conference League's been introduced the first year. It's going to be, you know, some people are going to think it's a bit of a, you know, obviously is the third level, but you know, third rate, you know, or make a mockery of it. It's not a big deal. It's, you know, it's,
still
it's,
need
a,
to
it's
win
a
it,
nothing
don't you?
trophy. You need to be in it to win it. You need to score the goals to win it. They did it. You know, they didn't come up against, you know, some of the elite clubs of Europe, but hey, Leicester City, Bodo Glimt gave them a, you know, a hiding in the group stages, and Roma reversed it, you know, with the help of Zaniolo, who was on fire at the time, you know, scoring a hat trick against them. Yeah, you know, it was a beautiful run. And I love the way they played that final. You know, they got the goal that they needed and kind of locked it up. And I don't remember much of a chance from Feyenoord in that final. And it was a very typical, I suppose, Jose Mourinho type of win, which I like. You know, what's better than a 1-0 lock it up at the back win?
You know,
that's fantastic football, if you ask me.
And they lost the 84 European Cup final to Liverpool.
Yeah,
lost
of course.
The 91 UEFA Cup final to Inter.
I remember that vividly, the 91 final. Yeah, I mean, you're jogging my memory now here.
Yeah.
You know, they lost the first leg away in Milan of that 91 UEFA final. They lost 2-0, I think, and then won the home leg 1-0. But aside from the goal that Rizzitelli scored, he also hit the post, you know. So it was a very, very narrow defeat, you know.
And they hadn't won since, I think they hadn't won since the Coppa Italia, in, you know, like 15, 20 years ago. I can't remember the exact year, but like, so.
In my time of being a Roma fan, Roma's had a good run of Coppa Italia wins. I think they're on 9, which is the second highest after Juventus.
Mm.
So, I mean, I would love them to take the Coppa Italia more seriously. I think it's a terrible format currently, but
I'd love it if all the teams took the Coppa Italia serious, because, you know, like someone like Atalanta to win the Coppa Italia, that's a trophy, man. You know, like even Napoli, I think Napoli would be kicking themselves this year that they didn't take it more seriously. Because
with the Coppa Italia, I think at the point where the top eight in Serie A come into it, it's not a struggle of a trophy to win, let's say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like an FA Cup.
Yeah, where you've been playing for, you know, the last,
I mean, I know
the
football calendar is loaded as it is, but it's got to be a proper cup competition to get the proper recognition and interest in it. You know, there's so many better ways that it could be, you know, reformatted, I think.
Yep.
You know, obviously the bigger teams have to come into it, if not from the start, much earlier.
Mm.
Definitely.
Mm.
But yeah, I would, you know, Roma's had some, you know, good victories over Inter. You know, there was like, you know, 6-2 aggregate or something. You know, I remember that Coppa Italia run, and you know, the Totti days, they did really well in the Coppa Italia. I think Giannini won it a couple of times as well. They've won some super cups. But yeah, you know, with the Scudetto, they've had some, you know, a bunch of, come in seconds that they possibly could have won. But Roma has always been a club that drops points against lower teams. Do well against on average, do well against the Juventus, Inter, Milans, you know, and capable of getting good results. But they've always dropped points that they shouldn't drop, because Roma is a club that, my brother loves me saying this, is that they celebrate before they've won anything, right?
Yeah.
Napoli they're like, it's no wonder that those fan bases were twinned, you know, back, you know, 20 or so years ago, because they both do it. They, Napoli's not really in danger of collapsing this time, but Roma celebrates before they've won anything and they collapse. Luckily, we didn't do it during the Conference League run. And that, I think, is because Mourinho has instilled a tougher mentality, you know. But yeah, it's a romantic drama being a Roma fan, put it that way. And I think a lot of Roma fans listening to this would understand and you know, agree where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, that's right. And that's Italian football down to a T, isn't it? You wouldn't have it any other way. So I'll just ask you before you go, because it's been awesome to chat, but it might be a silly question, but Roma kits, what's the greatest Roma kit in your opinion? Is it the late 80s Barilla kit, or is it the skin tight Kappa kits of the championship era, or is it this new age Nike stuff?
I don't know how many Roma kits I've got. I've probably got 15, maybe something like that. As among my collection of many others as well. At the moment, I'm wearing a VFL Bochum shirt for anyone who's, you know, obviously this is not a video format. Yeah, I'm wearing a Bochum shirt because that's where my family lives in Germany. So if I had to pick a German team, that would be my team. But yeah, I've got many Roma kits. My favorite one is the one that I bought for about $280 on eBay. It's the 92-93 white shirt with Barilla and Adidas as the three stripes down on the top of the sleeve there. That is for me, like, I've worn it very few times. I struggle to be able, I can't put it on. I don't want to dirty it.
Yeah. You've got kids too. You don't want them, you know, coming anywhere.
It's a prized possession. Yeah.
That hands one, off, Dad. Don't touch me. Yeah.
I actually tweeted it a few days ago. I put a photo of it on Twitter on my personal account because I think it was, what's the Twitter account that is about kits? Oh, there's so many of them.
There's so many, isn't there? Yeah.
But one of them tweeted a bunch of Roma kits, so I had to reply with that and, you know, show the one that I've got. Yeah, that's a beauty. Yeah, but I've got the one from the 2001 Scudetto with no sponsor. I love that. I love shirts without a sponsor, of whether it's any team. You know, I like the classic sponsors like Barilla, or if it's, you know, Juventus or PIM or Ariston.
Pirelli, they're great. Motta, all of those ones.
Yeah. Motta for Milan, for example, or Mediolanum. They're fantastic. But modern day sponsors, I'm not that fussed about. Maybe in 20 years' time, you know, you look back and think, oh, that was a cool
sponsor. Well, Roma had Ars Italia, which is always one of the greatest sponsors of all time.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a struggle, that one. I've got a couple of the Ars Italia ones. Yeah, it's a mix of the word for insurance and Italia. It comes out as Ars Italia. So yeah. Like, in the English speaking world, it's a tough one to wear.
Yeah.
But it does look good.
It does look good, of course. Yeah, it looks good. Oh, it's been awesome to chat, Simon. Yeah, so just let everyone know, where can we find yourself and Serie A Chronicles, you know, the work that they do, and Nikki and Mina, for example. Yeah,
for sure.
And Jerry, yeah, of course.
Jerry, I can't remember Jerry's business name, but if you need a graphic designer, just get in touch with me and I'll put you in touch. Yeah, follow Serie A Chronicles podcast as well as Gentleman Ultra, obviously. But yeah, you can follow us on any podcast app, Serie A Chronicles. The Twitter account is Serie A Cron Pod. And we're also on Instagram. And myself personally, you'll find me on Twitter at Simon Chronicles.
Awesome. Thanks, Simon. It's been great to chat.
Thanks, Frank. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, mate. And yeah, keep doing what you're doing.
That was a great conversation with Simon Cozzarano of Serie A Chronicles podcast. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to rate, review, share, and follow the podcast. It all helps. And for those who are the new followers and have left a rating, thanks very much. It's much appreciated. Take care, everyone. Enjoy your Calcio. Thanks for listening.